Whispering
Streets. And here is Betty Davis.
Hello. When Madge Parnell lost her husband, her whole nature and her entire appearance changed overnight. She'd been a gay, attractive woman, but now she seldom smiles and never laughs. She wore mourning for as long as possible, and when she graduated from black, she went into drab colors, and those colors were reflected in her home. One day, a neighbor, Rhoda Harvey, dropped in for tea. And as the women sat together in a darkened room...
Why don't you pull up the shade, Madge? I feel as though I'm attending a funeral.
You attended a funeral in this room just 18 months ago, Rhoda.
You needn't remind me, dear. I suffered for you and with you. But 18 months is a year and a half, and that's a long while.
A year and a half without Gifford is an eternity. But I'm with him every hour of the day and night, Rhoda. I imagine I hear his voice speaking to me from dim corners and...
You can't live in the past with a dead man, Madge.
Why, that's a horrible thing to say.
It's a necessary thing to say. I'm much older than you are, and I've been through a lot, but I've bounced back. I lost my husband in the First World War after 3 years of marriage, when we were both young. But I pulled myself together because I had a son to consider.
I didn't know you had a son, Rhoda.
I don't now. When word came back in 1945, just a couple of days before VE Day, word that my son had been killed in action, I stood stock still in the center of the room and said aloud, "Lightning can't strike twice in the same place. Isn't fair." I told myself that life wasn't worth living, that I'd take matters into my own hands.
Why, Rhoda, I never dreamed...
Wait a minute. I haven't finished. And then, as I stood alone in that silent room, I remembered that my husband and my son had died bravely, and that as a memorial to them, I must live bravely.
Well, that sounds very noble, but... Oh, my goodness, what's happening? How awful.
I don't think so. It's Neil, isn't it?
Yes, he has an old piano in his room. He saved his allowance and his Christmas money and his birthday money and bought it for $25 just a month ago.
Oh.
Well, naturally, he bought it without my permission. I wouldn't let him have it in the living room. That horrible racket's going through me like a knife. Just a minute, Rhoda.
Neil, stop that. At once.
Oh, Neil's the most insensitive boy in the world, Rhoda.
Madge, darling, he's not insensitive. He's only 15. I said something a moment ago about the past.
You said I was living in the past with a dead man.
And it's true. You're living in the past with a dead man, and you should be living in the future with a live boy. The dead man no longer needs you, Madge. The live boy does.
If you came here to hurt me, Rhoda...
I didn't come here to hurt you. I came for a cup of tea. The tea's growing cold. And if you don't change your attitude, so will our friendship, I'm afraid.
Alone in the darkened living room after Rhoda Harvey had left. She stared into space and her eyes filled with tears. Tears that she didn't bother to conceal when her young son came slowly through the doorway. Neil was tall for his age. His freckled nose had an impertinent tilt. His grin was wide and engaging. But at this minute, apologetic.
Hi, Mom. I thought you had company.
Rhoda Hervey just left.
I like Mrs. Hervey. I'm sorry I bothered you, banging on the piano like that. I was trying to pick out a tune some of the kids play.
I don't see how you have the heart to play that sort of thing, Neil, when you know that I'm grieving for your father. I should think you'd be grieving for him, too.
Gosh, Mom, I was crazy about Pop. You know that. But he died so long ago. Oh, gee, Mom, don't cry. I love you, Mom. I wish I could make it up to you. I mean, Pop dying and everything.
I know you mean that, Neil. You do love me, but you can't possibly fill the place your father left vacant. The only way you can help me is to respect my feelings.
In just a moment, Betty Davis will be back again, but first...
Provide for their college, the safe and easy way. It's sure with payroll savings, yeah, join that plan today. So always remember, it's a proud way to save.
United States savings bonds look something like money, but there's a big difference. Savings bonds grow. The longer you hold on to them, the more they're worth, and they now reach maturity in just 5 years, 10 months. Sign up for the payroll savings plan.
Always remember, it's a proud way to save. Take stock in America.
Back to our story with Betty Davis.
Neil, Madge Parnell's son, traced the muted pattern of the run with the toe of a scuffed shoe. He was at a loss. Any 15-year-old boy would have been at a loss. He raised his eyes and saw the tea tray standing on the table.
Mom, can I have what's left of those sandwiches and one of the frosted cakes?
Neil, we were talking of your father.
Oh, heck, I'm hungry.
Well, take the whole plate of sandwiches and go back to your own room and eat them there, Neil. Take all of the frosted cakes.
Okay. Why do you sit in the dark, Mom? It's a swell day. The sun's shining a mile a minute and...
Rhoda Hervey suggested that I pull up the shades. Why does everyone want me to pull up the shades? I know what sort of day it is, Neil. I was out earlier at the market. I'm glad it rained the day your father was buried.
Pop would have liked to have been buried on this kind of a day. I don't want any sandwiches. I guess I'll go out for a while.
Where to?
Just out.
Can't you tell your mother where you're going?
Oh, gee, Mom, I don't know where I'm going till I get started. Maybe I'll meet some of the fellows. Maybe I'll go to the park and see what's cooking. I hope you feel better someday, Mom. I hate to see you like this. Pop wouldn't have wanted to see you this way either.
But Madge didn't feel better soon. She clung to her grief stubbornly. A month went by and another. She was still a silent ghost of a woman living with another ghost, and the house was still dark and dreary. One afternoon, Neil came home from school with a group of boys. They trooped up to his room, and soon Madge heard them laughing. So she went to the foot of the stairs. Neil! Neil, come here for a minute, will you? Neil, answer me at once.
Did you call me, Mom?
Yes, come down here, will you?
Yeah, Mom? What do you want?
Who are those boys you took upstairs?
Oh, they're just a couple of fellas from my class in school.
Well, what were you laughing about?
We got a joke book. It's a blast.
A joke book? Oh, Neil.
What's wrong with a joke book?
Well, it isn't very respectful to your father. bringing boys into the house and letting them roar with laughter as if nothing were wrong?
Nothing is wrong, Mom. Pop's been dead almost 2 years. And if you'd rather, I'll take the fellas somewhere else.
Well, you don't have to take them anywhere. Send them away and stay home quietly with your mother.
I don't want to stay home quietly.
But I'm lonely, dear. I need you right now more than I've ever needed you.
Okay, Mom. Just give me a little time to ease the fellas out, would you? I don't want them to think that they're getting a bum's rush. And can they have some milk and cookies before they go?
Madge supplied the milk and cookies, grudgingly. And another month went by and another, and slowly she began to realize that Neil was away from home practically all of the time. She could only count on seeing him at the breakfast table and late at night. Lonely and despondent already, she began to worry about where he might be. One Sunday, she asked him point blank.
With the fellas, Mom.
But where? You can't just walk the street.
Oh, we go places.
What sort of places?
Just places.
Oh, I wish you wouldn't be so subversive, Neil.
I'm not being subversive. You make me sound like a counter spy or something when you use that word. It's only that I don't know how to answer you when you pin me down.
Well, I hardly ever see you, dear. You always used to stay home evenings when your father was here.
Things were different then.
For both of us, yes. Hand over the paper, Neil, if you're through with it.
I'm through. I was only looking at the comics. Here you are.
Oh, my goodness, this is awful. On the first page, too.
You mean the stuff about the plane crashing into the mountainside?
Oh,
and all those...
No, not that. It's local news. There's been a robbery at Keeley's sporting goods store. A bunch of young hoodlums held up Mr. Keeley.
Does it give their names?
They all wore masks.
Then Mr. Keeley didn't recognize any of them.
No, he didn't. Why are you so interested in whether or not they were recognized?
Heck, I'm not especially interested.
Well, you sounded as if you were.
I was just asking. You're the one who seems to be interested. Guess I'll go out, Mom. Guess I've had enough breakfast.
This is Sunday, Neil.
I know.
Let's go to church, Neil.
You haven't been to church since Pop died.
Well, I couldn't bear to sit in the pew where you and your father and I used to sit together. But I'll make the effort now, for your sake, if you say the word.
Don't put yourself out, Mom. You just take it easy and lie around and rest.
Madge had been vaguely worried about her son before this story of the holdup brought her vague alarm to a head. The words juvenile delinquent seemed to stare at her from every newspaper column. Whenever she turned on a news broadcast, she heard about juvenile delinquents. One morning, she ran into an old friend, a Mrs. Tompkins, on the street.
Well, hello, Madge. How are you feeling these days?
Just about the same.
Oh, I hoped you were beginning to be more reconciled to... Tell Neil I'm sorry he couldn't come to Jill's birthday party. Of course, it wasn't a very fancy party. The Willards, who live across the street, had a caterer when their daughter gave a party.
Well, Neil didn't mention the party to me.
But I guess he just didn't want to bother you.
What excuse did he give?
Oh, he said something about other plans. Oh, well, it was nice to see you, Madge. And I do hope you'll feel better soon.
In just a moment, Betty Davis will be back.
You know, it's the little things that count. Sometimes we forget that. But Captain Andrew DeMore, Communications Officer, 43rd Air Division Headquarters at Itazuke Air Base, and Mrs. DeMore didn't forget. they returned to the scene of their first station in Japan to bid farewell to many local friends before their return to the States. Captain DeMori admitted the existence of common problems in his assignments, but declared these were all solved by mutual understanding and assistance. When Colonel Ladson G. Eskridge, Jr., commander of the 43rd Air Division, heard of the DeMori's visit, he said, "Friendly gestures like this farewell visit illustrate that we are aware of our responsibilities in Japanese communities. And this is an example of what a devoted couple can accomplish concerning good community relations." By their illustration, Captain and Mrs. DeMori have given us all a thought to remember. We are Americans. As we go, so goes America. And now, back to our story with Betty Davis.
Madge asked Neil about the party that night. Jill Thompson was a very pretty girl. She and Neil had been friends for years. He told her that he didn't have a decent suit to wear to parties and added that he'd been fresh out of pocket money, so he couldn't afford a present. Madge said they'd go shopping whenever he had the time and that she'd always be glad to supply a gift for one of his nice friends. And Neil walked away from her muttering. And from then on, she found herself watching him very closely. So when a shambling boy came to the house one afternoon and asked for Neil, she was terrified.
But Neil isn't home from school yet.
Tell him Butch will be at the regular place. So long, Miss Parnell.
Well, where is the regular place? Tell me, where is the regular place?
Well, either he didn't hear me or he didn't want to hear me.
Moves into the human heart, there's no room for gentler emotions. Every move Neil made was observed keenly by his mother. Every time he used the phone, she longed for an extension so that she could listen in. Every time he went out, she asked him where he was going. Every time he came home, she asked where he'd been. Things reached a climax one evening when he started toward the door.
Neil, wait a minute.
But Mom, I'm in a hurry.
This is important. There's another story in tonight's paper. Some young hoodlums stole a car and wrecked it. Neil, are you acquainted with any of these juvenile delinquents?
Perhaps I am. I couldn't say offhand. I'm acquainted with just about all the fellows in town.
Well, when boys get together in gangs, they're criminals, really.
Mom, there are good gangs and bad gangs.
You haven't brought any of the boys home for ages.
Why should I?
Are you ashamed of them, Neil? Well, run along. I suppose you're meeting your gang at the usual place.
Uh-huh. I'll be seeing you, Mom. Later.
Afternoon that Madge grew very restless. Her hands felt cold and damp. Her forehead felt hot. When the phone rang and she heard Rhoda Harvey's voice on the other end of the wire, she knew an actual sense of relief. It was good to hear a calm and friendly voice.
You haven't called me for ages. How are you, dear?
Oh, I'm nervous, worried. Emil's acting very odd, and I don't know what to think.
Why don't you run over to my house for a while?
Well, I'm not dressed to go calling.
Oh, you won't see anyone but me. Come along, Madge. There'll be a change for you, and we can gossip a bit.
Well, okay, Rhoda. I'll be there in half an hour. Rhoda, did you say gossip?
Yes, I did.
Have you heard anything about Neil? Have you, Rhoda?
As Madge hailed a cab as she drove through familiar streets toward the home of a woman who had loved and lost doubly, who had been able to rise above her grief. She was wondering why Rhoda had called her this special afternoon and what she'd meant by gossip. Her friend met her at the door and drew her inside. Arms linked, the two women went into the living room, which was bright with gay chintz and bowls of garden flowers. Perhaps it was the very brightness of the room that made Madge feel more desolate than ever. She spoke huskily.
Oh, I'm scared, Rhoda. If Neil's gotten into bad company,
I... No, I suppose I should butter you up, Madge. But this isn't the time or the place for it. You worry because your son's away from home. But why should he stay home? Your house is like a mausoleum. Neil isn't allowed to entertain his friends or even to play pop music since his father died. He didn't have a good suit, for instance, to wear to a party. You don't pay any attention to his clothes.
Oh, Rhoda, help me. Don't criticize me.
I must. If Neil were a member of the gang that robs stores and steals cars and worse, you'd be the only one to blame. But thank heaven he isn't.
How do you know?
Before my son went overseas back in 41, I fitted up a rumpus room in the basement. There's a ping pong table and a record changer and shuffleboard.
What are you talking about, Rhoda?
Listen, Madge. Don't say a word. Just listen. Neil's down in my rumpus room with seven other boys, Madge. His good gang. They come here every afternoon the minute school's out.
You mean Neil would rather be here in your house than at home with me?
Yes, I'm sure he would. Madge, I could have locked that room, thrown away the key when my boy was no longer able to use it. But I think it pleases him to know that other boys are having fun there. You've locked your heart, Madge, the way I might have locked the rumpus room. Now, don't, Madge. Tears are unconstructive. Instead of crying, think up ways to get closer to your son, to compete for your son's love. And you'll have to think hard and fast because I'm pretty tough competition.
Boy must often treat him as she'd treat a grown man. She must compete time and again for his love and, well, this is almost more important, for his friendship. It's a hard world for adolescents and for mothers. But sometimes the mothers concentrate on their own problems until the problems grow out of all proportion. It was so with Charlotte Tompkins.
And now here again is Betty Davis.
Charlotte Tompkins had a very serious problem, and it was within herself. She was torn by envy. She continually broke an important commandment by coveting that which was her neighbor's. And then all at once, she was pulled up short. I'll tell you whether she was cured in time. Until then, this is Betty Davis saying goodbye from the Whispering Street.
Today's program was written by Margaret E. Sangster. Featured in the cast were Irene Tedrow, Stuffy Singer, Helen Cleave, and Mary Lansing. Whispering Streets was directed by Gordon T. Hughes and produced by Ted Lloyd. Your announcer is Dan Coverley. Whispering Whispering Streets has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.